Good morning, and thank you for tuning into the KBOO Bike Show. We're glad to have you join us today. I'm Jocelyn Gowdy, and I'm joined by fellow hosts Tori Bortman and Christopher Delaney.
Good morning, Josie.
Good morning.
Morning, Jocelyn.
Hi. I'd like to start the show off with a quote I really like by an individual named Peter Kolkin. And he said, "My two favorite things in life are libraries and bicycles. They both move people forward without wasting anything." And I absolutely relate to this, his sentiment, and I'm therefore excited to introduce our guest for today's show, whose creations may be found in libraries and at your local independent bookstore as well. I'll introduce Ellie Tallheimer, Evan Schneider, and Christine Bruce. So first off, Ellie Tallheimer is an accomplished freelance travel writer and cycle tourist who believes that there are few better ways to travel and learn than by bike. Co-founder of the nonprofit business alliance, the Portland Society, zealous Oregonian yogini, and author of Lonely Planet Cycling Italy, drinker of yerba mate, Ellie rarely turns down an adventure. When away from Portlandia, she misses the bejesus out of her husband Joe and puppy dog Winston. She's here today to discuss her recently released book, Cycling Sojourner, A Guide to the Best Multi-Day Tours in Washington, which is a follow-up to her guidebook covering multi-day tours in Oregon, which was published last year. Hi, Ellie. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Also introducing Evan Schneider. He is the founding editor of Bone Shaker, a bicycling almanac, and the author of the novel A Simple Machine Like the Lover, which was optioned for film by the Hoffman Brothers. He and his wife, Judith Edwards, live in Garden in the Montevilla neighborhood, where Evan serves on the board of directors of the Montevilla Farmers Market. He'll be speaking with us today about the forthcoming 10th edition of Bone Shaker, a bicycling almanac. Hi, Evan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. Finally, born on Manitoulin Island, Christine has embraced adventure. That's Christine Bruce. She stood on a glacier on the equator, has hiked through jungles, rode the Rideau Canal, and traveled backwards in time. She cycled up a volcano, gasped at the Aurora Borealis, and consoled a Komodo dragon. Been rescued by an Icelandic pony, and in turn, rescued urban trees. And she shared affectionate moments with feral cats. Throughout, she was astonished that anyone could not be startled at life. In response, she's written, "This road continues one block north to illustrate the difference people can make in themselves, in others, and in the environment, just by riding bicycles." The inspiration she felt when she heard a bike story in the greater Toronto area. Hi, Christine.
Hello. Thanks for having me there.
Of course. Thanks so much for joining us today. So we have a lot to talk about today. I'm so excited that we have three great guests joining us. And we'll kind of bounce around, make sure that everybody has an opportunity to talk about their own individual books, and then kind of have a broader conversation about cycling in general. So, Ellie, I'd like to start with you. And first off, you know, can you tell us a bit about how you selected the 9 routes that you've included in the tour guide for Washington?
I talked to lots of bikey experts and weathered bicycle tourists from Washington, mm-hmm. and got their take on what should be included. And then I actually vetted some of the routes myself. I had 4 other authors on the book with me. And it's really easy to encounter great, great cycling in Washington. So it was hard to pare it down, but managed to do it. Just chose things with the least traffic, the most beauty, and services and camping, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Washington seems to be very proud of their cycling opportunities, both urban and rural. Both the governor and multiple mayors from around the state seem very proud of the opportunities that are offered.
It's really interesting. They defunded their equivalent of our Travel Oregon, which is a huge proponent for cycling in Oregon. So they have, Washington Bikes, which is an organization in Washington, has taken over sort of the bicycle travel advocacy. But other than that, the state actually does very little to talk about its touring opportunities, which are absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. That must have been a huge, you must have been like candy coming to them. They were like, yes, please write a book.
Yes, they're like, yes, you do something. We're not going to fund anything. Thank God you're doing something. But actually, Washington Bikes has taken a huge step and huge strides to be the bicycle travel advocate for the state, and they're scrappy and they're doing a really great job, and they helped actually get this book going and get it out there.
Yeah, very good. So after you have selected a route, what's your personal process for building a tour that you can then include in your book?
Well, I started out as a bicycle guide following cues, and then I started creating, I created a route for the cycle, for Woman Tours, the company I worked for. And then once I started freelancing, I did a Lonely Planet guide in Cycling Italy, and so I worked with their format. And then, so then the next step for me was to do exactly what I wanted, to do the maps the way I wanted to do them, include things like breweries and yoga studios that I, you know, that I valued, mm-hmm. and I think that other cyclists would value as well. So there was a lot of, it was a slow process of building skills to come to a place where I knew exactly what I wanted to include and the information that a cycle tourist would really want, and Lonely Planet wouldn't let me do certain things that I wanted to do to include. And
they wouldn't let you make it fun.
yeah, that's the thing. I had to have the Lonely Planet tone in my voice, but in my books, I make sure to say whatever thing that I wanted to say with no apologies, and exactly, you know. Sometimes I include a Spanish word, or sometimes I make up a word.
Yeah, it has a very unique LA theme, like LA tone throughout the whole book, and it makes it very genuine. So I enjoyed that aspect of it very much.
I wanted to have it be like a friend telling you over mm-hmm. beer where to go and what to do, but with expertise behind it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I managed to do that because as I researched the routes, I really think about my readers all the time. I'm thinking about them all the time. What would they want? The variety of readers that I would have. What would they want? And so by the end, I feel super close to them. And I have this like huge
readers.
Love for my readers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And still, you must have, I mean, there must be much more along the routes that you want to include.
Oh, for
sure. And you
sure.
just have to pare down to.
Yeah.
To what the highlights are, so.
And that's another really important part of a skill set for a guidebook author. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and a nice segue then is, you know, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned while you're out creating these tours, either about bike touring itself or about riding?
Throughout all of my bike touring experience, I guess the ability to be flexible is super important, because the weather may change and you may be huddling underneath a barn and the end of your day might look a lot different. Or maybe you run into a cowboy that you want to talk to more, and not like, you know, hypothetically. maybe you stop.
Or I've had the pleasure of touring with Ellie a little bit, and we get to a town and the restaurant we were planning on eating at closed an hour ago. So especially when you're in rural towns, yeah. their hours are sometimes really limited. So yeah.
So yeah. Then you eat your arm. No.
And which of these Washington tours was your favorite, and why would you say?
That's a hard. That there's so many. Each of the tours has a special aspect to it in my heart. But I really am in love with Eastern Washington. There are a number of Eastern Washington tours out in the Okanagan. We went beautiful on a beautiful, beautiful June week, and there we saw maybe two riders. No one is out there, and there it's just you have orchards and deserts and bluffs and deep forests and all, and beautiful, beautiful traffic-free roads, quirky little towns and ghost towns, and no one's out there. And the ability to still have an adventure is just awesome out there.
Yeah, it sounds readily available, so easy.
How were you treated by the people in Eastern Oregon or other places?
I have a good story about that. My husband and I were touring together, and we were on this lone road by the Similkameen River, and this big old pickup truck comes along and stops ahead of us, you know, and from being from Portland, we're like, our hackles are a little bit up, and I'm like, you know what? I don't want to deal with anything. And because he waves us over. And I'm like, okay, well, it's time to chat. And then he said, you guys are going so fast that you miss the family of bald eagles that are right there. And he pointed us to a nest of eaglets with this huge bald eagle right by the river. And that kind of like, it exemplifies my experience of Eastern Washington motorists. They're just super nice, give you lots of room. And people are really nice and they're interested in what you're doing because it's really, you know, odd. Sometimes
you're a unique road user out there.
Yeah, for sure.
And the tour that you mentioned, how many days is that one?
You could make it shorter or longer, but 5 days is a good amount of time to do it. It's not very hardcore time to do it in, or if you want to get a little bit more hardcore, you could do it quicker. But there's also opportunities that I mentioned to make it a longer tour, to some side stops that you can take or places that you can stop mid-while. You could take a while out there if you wanted to go slow and see the sights.
Sure. Yeah, and that's another great aspect of your book, is you offer a lot of different options for different types of riders and different, you know, if you only have a weekend to adventure, you know, here's a 1 or 2 day, go for it. And if you have a whole week, take your time, plan something, you know, maybe you add in that extra mountain pass. So I really liked that.
Yeah, I really, I wanted to make the tours, even the hard tours, accessible to people maybe who didn't want to do as much mileage, by including all of the stops where you can stay at a hotel or you can camp along the way. So even the harder tours can be made more accessible, as well as providing just a general variety of length and difficulty level.
Very good. And another interesting aspect of this book is that you were commencing the writing of it shortly after you found out that you were pregnant. Is that correct?
Yeah. So for distribution, you have to get in the catalog a year before it launches. And I just, you know, signed up, and here we're going, and we're doing this book. And then I got pregnant, and I was extremely sick. I was extremely sick almost the whole time, and but my husband helped me so much. I don't know if I could have done it without his support, but I went on the tours anyway, and I went really slow. And the funny thing was that it was maybe the only thing that made me feel better. Even when I went on rides from home, it didn't make me feel better, but going on tour gave me a little bit
just
of relief.
Getting out of the city.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it kind of exemplifies why cycle touring is so cool, because you can go as slow as you want. I kept a heart rate monitor and made sure my heart rate stayed at a certain low point, which made mountain passes really long.
Get that low gearing going.
Yeah, but it just kind of shows you that, you know, whoever you are, if you can ride a bike, you can probably go on a bike tour.
Yeah, that's great.
There was actually a little bit of lying on the side of the road in the shade, like in a gravel pit, and it felt like a down, you know, bed, and I was just lying there closing my eyes.
How many months then did you continue to ride?
My last tour, I finished it at 6 months. Yeah, that was in Walla Walla, which is really great. My handlebars it ended there, you know. They couldn't get any higher on my touring bike, so.
That's wonderful. Great. Well, can you give us an insight into where we can buy your book in Portland?
Sure. I, of course, love for you to visit my website, which is cyclingsojourner.com, and you can buy it there, and I would love that. If you want to stop into a bookstore, most bookstores around will be carrying it, Powell's. And you can also buy it many online places. But I suggest either my website or going to Powell's to get the book. And also, tomorrow at 5:30 at VeloCult, the Cycling Sojourner launch is happening from 5:30 to 7:30. And I would love to see folks out there. And if you buy a book, you get a beer. Which is kind of the way we roll at Cycling Sojourner. And if you're a Kickstarter backer, then you also get beer.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks so much.
From Hopworks, which is awesome. We love Hopworks.
We do. Great. Well, Evan, let's turn to you and talk about Bone Shaker, a bicycling almanac. So could you briefly introduce what the Bicycling Almanac is, and, you know, where it came from?
Is it like a farmer's almanac?
You ask briefly. We'll try. But I guess Bone Shaker kind of came out of my own looking around about 7 or 8 years ago at what was on the market for cycling publications. And my background is in English. I have a bachelor's degree in English. I have a master's degree in English. And I kind of grew up on literary magazines. And so I kept looking around at bicycling or mountain bike or any of these really glossy magazines. And I thought, wow, there's really nothing that captures the experience that I routinely have on a bicycle, which is more an aesthetic one or an artistic one, or one in which I'm not necessarily training or I'm not attempting to get anywhere in particular. I'm just out on the bike trying to enjoy the bike ride. So I thought, well, what if I take the knowledge that I have, which is writing and editing, and I pitch this magazine, this literary magazine for bicyclists. So in 2007, I sat down with Todd Simmons at Wolverine Farm Publishing, which is a nonprofit publishing company back in Fort Collins, Colorado. And I said, so I have this idea. We should do, I actually pitched a book kind of around this idea of enjoying the bicycle ride artistically. And we had a pretty lengthy 8 or 9 hour discussion in his backyard in the winter. And at the end of this discussion, he and I kind of came to the realization that we were making a periodical, because we couldn't figure out what slant we really wanted to nail down for this book. So we decided, what if instead of us writing it, we ask other people to write it? We make it a submission-based literary magazine for bicyclists. So for the first issue, to get it off the ground, I had to solicit a lot of pieces from writers that I knew who also rode bicycles. And so I compiled that first issue, and then I was able, and I was very lucky to be able to travel with New Belgium Brewing Company's Tour de Fat for 2 years, which goes to a number of really large cities in the country. And so I took Bone Shaker with me and I disseminated it. And from that came a flood of submissions, because I think it really resonated with people that there was something deeper and more enjoyable to the bike ride than just just physical activity. There was something deeper psychological happening. And so I just kind of opened it up as a artistic forum. And the submissions came in from all over. And so now we're headed into our 10th issue.
So they continue to come in.
They do.
Rapidly. Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I sometimes ask where they even came across it, because we distribute and we do all the distribution ourselves. And so usually it's if a cafe or a bike shop in Cleveland or Miami or London reaches out and says, oh, we'd love to carry Bone Shaker, we set them up with it. But I always ask, how did you come across Bone Shaker? And a lot of times it's a friend gave it to me, or I found it in a cafe, or somebody left it behind somewhere. And I just kind of love that grassroots submission process.
Absolutely. And I came to learn of it. Evan and I worked together on the Tweed Ride back in, was that 2009 that we did the
first? I think so. We did a couple.
And I approached Evan to kind of lead the verbiage aspect of making the Tweed Ride into this elegant affair. And he certainly did, and I think that elegance is brought to the Bone Shaker as well. What my favorite aspect of the Bone Shaker is just how unique every single page of every single edition is. I mean, you can't overlook a word. The copyright page, which is something that most folks just glance right over, don't overlook it in the Bone Shaker. It's that literally fine print is some of the most clever stuff that you'll find in the whole book. I really, really enjoy that. And another interesting, unique aspect is the cover art for each edition. Can you speak a bit about that?
Sure. There's an artist back in Fort Collins, Colorado named Jeff Nye, who has a very robust bicycle museum that he himself has created from the ground up, in which he finds these old, almost 100-year-old, in some cases older than that, bicycles that he refurbishes for himself and for the city so that people can see them. And in the process of doing these restoration projects, as a trained artist, he keeps an amazing notebook of sketches of all of these bikes. And when Todd Simmons and I were first thinking about what's going to go on the cover of Bone Shaker, we approached Jeff and we said, hey, could we have a peek at these notebooks? He had 6 or 7, and that was full artistic notebooks 8 years ago, and he's kept it up. And so we just perused them and said, would you allow us to feature your artwork on the cover of each Bone Shaker? And kind of speaking to your comment about the copyright page. I've had people reach out to me and say, you know, you should really change the covers a little bit more drastically so that people can tell the difference between them. Because really what changes is the very, very, very tiny print and then the bicycle. Mm-hmm. There's a different drawing on each. But I disregarded that comment because I thought the people that are going to enjoy Bone Shaker the most are going to be the people that look closely at the details, and I'm making it for them. And if they can't see the difference, that's fine by me. Somebody will, and they'll deeply appreciate it.
Yeah, it definitely necessitates a double take. It's absolutely worthwhile. And then another artistic unique aspect of your books are the Jackie Avery postcards that are included with each. And I don't think I realized until I was kind of looking through some of the editions yesterday. That was in the first or second edition was the first time you included some Jackie Avery art. Is that, do I have that correct?
I think that sounds right. Mm-hmm. I met Jackie at a Reading Frenzy event actually here in Portland maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and she had these astonishing paintings that were based on old bicycling photographs, and I just approached her and said, I'd love to, number one, feature your artwork in the almanac, and then number two, feature your artwork on a postcard that we could tuck inside the next edition and really promote, therefore, your art and then promote the almanac at the same time.
Yep. It's a neat little promo in there. So could you describe briefly the process of how you select these, you know, the stories, the poems, comics, sketches that you receive as submissions, and how you really kind of pull it all together? Because I mean, there are pages in the Bone Shaker where you kind of have to turn the book laterally, or you know, that could be that art is kind of tucked off to the one side and it's slightly askew. So how do you go through the process of kind of putting it all together page by page?
Sure. To a previous question about is it like the Farmer's Almanac, I think I ended up naming it an almanac because it was basically everything. It is maps, it is poetry, it is lists, it is essay, it is short story, it is photography, it's artwork, it's all of those things. And I liked the idea of trying to capture in essence seasons, or capture in essence just this experience of being in the saddle by yourself. And so the submission process really is just that. In the front, we have a call for submissions that says if you have something literary minded that you'd like to submit to us, please do. And in going through all those submissions, I really pay a lot of attention to what I call the narrative arc of each issue. And I try to make sure that it's pretty balanced, that there's a sprinkling of all different genres of piece in each almanac. And one of the things that I try intentionally to do is have a wide geographic representation, because as it would make sense, places like Portland or Chicago or Denver, places that have a pretty robust cycling infrastructure, those cities tend to submit more on the whole. Writers submit from those cities more often than other places. But I try to make certain that Miami, Florida, if somebody writes in from there, or I have submissions sometimes from overseas, which I still am not sure how they found out about it, but France, in our last issue, we had a gentleman wanting to write a story about an alley cat that he attended in France that I thought was a fantastic piece. So I really just try to choose a wide range of pieces that reflect the entirety of the bicycle experience, which I know on the outset is impossible, but I'm trying to capture that a little bit as editor.
Sure. Is there a submission that stands out as a personal favorite for you?
You know, a couple of years ago, a very fantastic writer named Johnny Waldman sent in a piece, and it was one of my favorites because he and I went back and forth probably 6 or 7 different times about his piece on the tone and on the setup, but he wrote sort of a chronicle of a cross-country bike trip that he took and the different people that he encountered, sort of like if we took your Sojourner's Guide, and instead of setting up what you should do or what you can do, it's a reflection on what actually happened. And it'd be a paragraph or two about seeing those bald eagles. And Johnny Waldman's piece, there's a fantastic part where in Kansas, Kansas or Nebraska. He holes up in somebody's truck overnight, like an old abandoned truck, and just asks somebody, "Hey, I'm on this bike tour. Do you mind if I crash underneath your truck for the night?" And sure enough, he does, and a tornado comes at night. And it's just a really, really fantastic read of how he gets out of this safely with his bike and keeps going, and all the different people and the truckers that he meets on the road.
Hell, I'm going to have to reread that one. Which edition was it in?
Oh, you know, I think it was three or four ago, but the Utney Reader picked it up and reprinted it. So, it was a pretty ridiculously great piece.
Yeah. And speaking of ridiculously great, we were speaking about how Esquire UK has caught attention of this little book. Can you tell us what they said about the Bone Shaker?
Yeah, sure. Again, I'm pretty surprised sometimes by how this thing gets disseminated and how it ends up in other countries. But sure enough, I got an email one day from Esquire UK, and they said, "Hello, Evan. We wanted to let you know that we've chosen Bone Shaker, A Bicycling Almanac, to feature in our fall issue as one of 50 things all men cannot do without." And so I responded to them and I said, Are you sure you're looking at the same thing that I make?" And so I sent them a cover image, and I said, the almanac that we make in Colorado, United States?" And he said, "Yes, it's fantastic. We'd love to feature it." So sure enough, it's on the same page as a sports car and a power drill, as like number 36, something that all men must have.
This is that yours being so awesome. The refined part of the male Esquire culture, I'm assuming.
This kind of cultured
After you're done aesthetic. Using your power drill.
In your sports car, sit down
in the backyard with your beer, with your craft beer,
and enjoy some almanac stories. So yeah, it gets around, and I'm not sure how. But.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I previously mentioned that this forthcoming edition will be the 10th. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Anything special that you're doing for that anniversary?
Well, you know, after our fifth issue, what we did was we decided to put together a box set. So we had held back 100 copies of each issue. We print 2,000 to 3,000 of each, and they've all sold out. And mm-hmm. so the first five, we held back 100 copies and made a box set that we put together in old cigar boxes with a seal. And so you could buy all five at that time when the fifth one came out. And so for the 10th, I think we have in mind a little best of or a complete Bone Shaker Bicycling Almanac book to kind of cap off the first 10 issues and see how that floats.
Yeah, sounds super classy. Where can somebody pick up Bone Shaker, A Bicycling Almanac?
You know, you can subscribe to it as a periodical. We promise twice a year, but that usually comes down to about once a year. I took a cue from McSweeney's Quarterly Concern back in the day, who said they were a quarterly magazine that came out three times a year. So we're a semi-annual publication that comes out about once every three quarters a year. Anyhow, you can subscribe to it at wolverinefarm.org. You can pick it up at Powell's. You can pick it up at cafes and bookstores and bike shops all over the country, actually.
All right, very good. Thanks so much, Evan. We're going to take a quick break, come back for a Bike Show News Minute, and then we'll chat with Christine and Bruce. Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, so good to be here with y'all. Give me some.
You're listening to the KBOO Bike Show on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Christopher Delaney, and this is your Bike Show News Minute. At a press conference yesterday, Mayor Charlie Hales and Commissioner Steve Novick announced that a vote for the street fee proposal will be moved to November. The street fee, which was originally scheduled to be voted on today by City Council, will add substantial and crucial funding for safety and infrastructure upgrades for people riding bikes and walking around the city of Portland. Although small businesses, members of low-income communities, and advocates for social justice and equality are concerned with the regressive nature of the fee and the methods by which the street fee will be collected. Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick have pledged to use the delay to continue seeking input from residents of Portland on how to solve the challenges of funding the maintenance of a deteriorating street network while continuing to make infrastructure enhancements that make our streets safer for everyone walking, biking, riding public transit, and driving. In other news, the first ever Oregon Outback race took place over Memorial Day weekend and was successfully completed by over 100 men and women from around the country. The unsupported 360-mile race started in Klamath Falls on the southern border of Oregon and traveled over gravel and dirt roads and 15,000 feet of elevation change to the Deschutes State Park on the northern border of Oregon. Ira Ryan, a local frame builder and champion of adventure, was the fastest finisher with a total time of 28 hours and 4 minutes. But most of the racers took around 3 to 5 days to complete the course. Oregon Outback is the brainchild of Donnie Kolb, the man behind Velodirt.com, and his community of enthusiastic and somewhat eccentric bikepacking aficionados. They plan to continue the ride in the coming years, and they're excited to have many more people share in their joy of exploring Oregon's world-class network of gravel and dirt riding. If you're interested, the next KBOO Bike Show will be about the Oregon Outback. So tune in on the first Wednesday of next month at 11 a.m.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Christopher. Much appreciated. Now let's turn to Christine Bruce. She's joining us on the phone from Kingston, Ontario, which I had to look, I had to Google map that and see where that was. And it turns out it's halfway between Toronto and Montreal. So, Christine, thanks so much again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yep, absolutely. That was an impressive biography that you sent me this morning. And I'm sure that I totally skipped over the part of your ethnic heritage, because there was a word in there that I wasn't quite sure how to pronounce, and we didn't have the opportunity to chat with it beforehand. So why don't you take a moment and give us some information about your background, you know, where you came from, and how it is that you came to settle in Toronto in 2010 or 2011 to start working on your book, This Road Continues One Block North.
Okay, well, the reason I give you what sounds like a very exotic background is that the idea in Canada of somebody cycling at the age of 56, a woman, sometimes sounds exotic, as if it's not something that the average person is ever going to embrace. We still see a bicycle as a piece of sports equipment, and you'd never use it as a commuter. I mean, there are people who do it, but the average person doesn't see it that way. So my background is Ojibwe and British and French-Canadian. So people see that as exotic right away, but it's as Canadian as it gets. I have traveled around the world. It's been an unconventional life, but actually, when you start reading the book, you realize I'm just a very nice little old lady. You know, I'm not a bike nerd. I really don't know very much about bicycles. I just have heard a lot of great bike stories and thought, wow, if somebody collected these into a book, maybe it would inspire other people to get on a bicycle the way it does me. So I bring it from the exotic, which is how we always feel, to the more commonplace, more conventional, the sense that anybody can do this.
Sure, and I understand that the kind of birth of this book came out of your volunteering at a bike valet service and just
right,
and engaging
I
these cyclists.
You know,
go ahead.
Right, I assume you know what that is, right? Valet bike parking?
Yeah, go ahead and explain it for our listeners.
Because a lot of people here don't seem to know what that is. Mm-hmm. So valet bike parking is where we encourage people to leave their car at home and bring their bicycle. They don't even need a lock. We'll babysit the bicycle for you for free. And that enables people to come to an event and enjoy it. And suddenly they realize, gosh, the commute wasn't anything. It was no big deal at all. I can do that anytime.
In fact, it might have been fun.
We're enabling cycling. Yes. And people would come in and they'd bring their bike in. And I'm actually a very shy person, so I don't make eye contact very well. But I look at the bike and I say, wow, nice bike. And suddenly this bike story comes out, and they didn't know they were carrying it, and of course I didn't know, but the more bike stories I hear, the more I realize that they have three things in common. They're all unique, which which sounds like a not common thing, but it is. Mm-hmm. They're all love stories, and they're all inspiring. So that's the reason I decided that I would start this project.
And at the onset, how did you come to engage these cyclists into being interviewed for the book?
Well, because I'm shy, again, I wanted to approach the bicycles and not the people. So I made a very simple business card, and it basically says, "Hi, I'm interviewing people for bike stories, and your bicycle has caught my eye. If you're interested, send me an email," and then I leave an email address. And lots of people contacted me and said, "I went up and down the street and didn't find any cards on any other bikes." So they're really flattered that I have carded their bike.
That is, yeah,
and,
very flattering.
And they immediately say to me, "I don't have any bike stories." And as soon as I say, "So tell me about your bike," blah, this bike story comes out, and they look as surprised as I am to hear this thing.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And there are some great, great stories in your book. I really enjoyed getting to know on a very genuine level these individuals that you met, and the way that stories kind of evolved and morphed into, well, you know, you should, if you like my story, you should definitely meet this person in town, or well, if you know this person, have you spoke with their friend so-and-so? And mm-hmm. It's kind of cool how all the stories kind of play on each other. And through it, I mean, it kind of seems like you're on a journey of self-discovery as well. So I wanted to ask you, you know, what did you learn about yourself through the creation of this book?
Well, so the interesting part for me is, as I say, I'm not a bike nerd. I'm an average person. I started out not even knowing what a fixie is. I had to contact my daughter to find out from the very first story. What is this thing? And so the point of that, running through the entire thread of the book, is that anybody can do this. You don't ever have to have gotten on a bike before, because at the very beginning, I don't know anything either. So you're basically sitting beside me while I'm interviewing these people, and you're learning new things. And I'm hoping that you will also be inspired to do the things that I've done. Wow, there's a tall bike. Can I try that?
Well, what I'm finding
really, do you mind if I try that?
What I'm finding really fascinating about your story is that you are also someone that might be considered a very unlikely suspect for going out and purposefully meeting people, and that's probably was a big fear to overcome, but you found your own unique way of managing that and saying, "Hey, I know that I can do this."
Yes.
I know I can, not so much even as a cyclist, but as an author.
Right, absolutely. And you see, I hear that all the time with people, people who say, "Well, I could never get on a bicycle," or, "I was on a bicycle once and I had an accident." So there's always this fear, but there are also all these misconceptions that people build up around them as walls, so they'll never have to get on a bike. And I say to them, "But look at me, I did it."
Can you tell me some of those common misconceptions that you hear?
Well, lots of people think that a bicycle is for a child. So once you are old enough to get a driver's license, you don't need a bike anymore. Lots of people think that it's only for the elite, right? And we all know elite athletes. I mean, I've met some very elite athletes. And one of the people I interviewed was Michael Berry, who was a métier for Lance Armstrong. It doesn't get any more elite than that. And yet he's a wonderful, very kind, very self-effacing man, and which is what I'm finding with most cyclists. Yes, there's, like anything else, you can have elite people who are not very nice to be around. But generally, the most common cyclist I meet is very self-effacing, very sweet-natured, and they've gotten over some challenges, some misperceptions, and they've gotten on that bicycle and tried it for themselves and proven themselves those misperceptions wrong.
Well, and I'm curious, because I'm someone that's been in the bike universe so long that I would love to hear your more, coming into it more recently, your perception of how you would either challenge or encourage someone who said it's for a kid, or I'm not strong enough, I'm not an athlete. What do you, from your experience, tell people?
So the first thing I say is, well, I'm 56 and I'm doing it, and so I don't understand the attitude that you can't. Surely you can make an, you know, try it, because that's what I did, just tried it. But the other thing is, and one of the people that I've interviewed here in Kingston, because I've now started, it's morphed into a radio program now, where I interview people and then I share the story on the radio to try and encourage people. And one of the stories I collected just a couple of weeks ago is from a woman from Halifax who had given up cycling when she got her driver's license, And she had won this prize where someone for 3 hours would take a group of people out who had won the prize. They'd go on bicycles, and at the end, they'd have a picnic. And this
that sounds lovely.
Enabled them. They taught them all the safety rules. They taught them how to brake, how to use the gears. They let them try different kinds of bikes. For 3 hours, they got to puddle around with bikes. And by the end of it, she was hooked. So I said to her, Kim, you and I have to get together and we have to do this here in Kingston. We have to say to people, here, you've just won a prize. Come on out on a bike ride with us. You know, it's as easy as that.
Yeah, sometimes giving people things for free, when, and especially when they feel like they've won something, is a great incentive.
But it's enabling them, too. As long as we can enable them and make them realize how easy this is, I'm sure we'll get lots of people, lots of takers.
And what I'm also curious, in Portland, we're a little bit spoiled, I guess is the word, or it's cycling is such a part of the culture that it's really everywhere on the street. So that thought of like, I can't do this, really, you do see this, the 70-year-old and the 7-year-old and actually the 7-month-old and sometimes the 7-week-old on bicycles in Portland. You see it all. And so it's a little bit easier to get your head around that maybe I can do this. What's it like where you live in Kingston?
Well, there are people like you and me here, but the average person doesn't see it that way at all. And there is this huge fear factor that they're just grappling with. But because I have this radio program now, and because I'm becoming a face in town, people approach me and they say, you're the bike lady. And I try and be very approachable in my response, non-threatening. I had someone come up to me in the grocery store yesterday and say, you know, you interviewed my husband. And then she sheepishly admitted to never having listened to it. But she's going to go to the archives now. And she's going to listen to it because she's met me. And I'm just an average lady, right?
Right.
So I'm making it accessible to them. I'm enabling them. So we're seeing lots of fear, lots of, you know, I could never do that myself. Oh, really? You know, I'm trying to flip a switch. And, you know, as I've been saying to people, I'm going to be interviewed by somebody in Portland, Oregon, and anybody in Canada who knows anything about bicycles. We all feel like when we grow up, we want to be just like you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Very flattering. Yeah. Thanks, Christine. So if we wanted to follow along with your story as it progresses, where would we go?
What you want to do is either go to the website, which is oneblocknorth.wordpress.com, or you can follow the radio program, which is called Totally Spoked at CFRC.
All right, very good. And that's Totally Spoked. Spoked is SPOKE'D if you're Googling that. That's what to search for. And if we wanted to pick up one, this actually, I forgot. I had a great question for you. The title of your book, could you explain a bit where that came from? We're interested.
It's a very Toronto-centric thing. So Toronto is a collection of a whole bunch of smaller communities. So when you shove smaller communities together, you get odd angles. And very often, a street will end suddenly at a park, but you haven't found your number yet. So the city has decided that the way to tell people that there's more to this street at the other end of the park, there'll be a sign that says, this road continues one block west, or this Smith Street continues one block south. Right? Which is useless information because you already know that there's got to be more. And this doesn't tell you how to get there. So that's very much the Toronto cycling problem. We all have to be innovative about how we ride because we don't have enough infrastructure. We don't really have a lot of political support, but we still want to do it. So we will. So I chose North because it's more of a Canadian theme.
Very good. Yeah. And if we wanted to pick up a copy, where would we go for that?
I'm available on Amazon, on iTunes, there's Kindle, Kobo. But if you go to oneblocknorth.wordpress.com, it'll tell you how to get an e-version of it.
Okay.
And if you want a hard copy, you'll have to contact me.
Okay. And any plans for a bike tour to Portland?
I would love to do a bike ride.
Come visit.
Yes, please.
We'll all ride together.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
It would be, absolutely. So I wanted to kind of throw the conversation over to Christopher. He had a question that we can kind of present to the group and maybe have a discussion about.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Ellie. I have a 2-year-old little girl, and my wife and I have talked about doing a bicycle tour. I was wondering if you have toured with your child? If not, you know, what are plans in the future? How are you guys planning on doing that with equipment and picking the route and whatnot?
And right. Diapers.
Yeah, diapers. Lucy Birmingham, who went with her, a local writer, went with her child and actually ran out of diapers once and begged a two-year-old diaper for her, I think, year old. I don't remember how old Oscar was, actually.
I think he was about a year and a half.
Yeah. So they begged a too large diaper off of someone in a car. That's how they dealt with that. My daughter Ruby is 4.5 months old, and we are planning to go with her on a tour that's possibly the Walla Walla tour in the Washington book, which is about 25 miles per day. Either July or August or September, depending on our schedule. And we're definitely thinking about going on a fat bike tour down the Oregon coast. We'll have to get some wheels built, possibly by Jude, by Sugar Wheel Works for the Chariot. So that's pretty flat.
Okay, I'm going to really fast here interject. This is Tori. And Ellie, for folks who don't live in Portland or not from this area, they might not know what a chariot is. And the first thing my mind jumps to, if I haven't seen this, is how old is Ruby again?
4.5 months.
So she'll be six. How are you going to carry a six-month-old on a bike tour? Are you going to put her in a pannier? Like, what are you going to do?
Right.
So can you explain for our listeners how
we actually have a chariot. We'll hook my husband up to the end of it, and we'll just...
A chariot.
What is a chariot? It'll carry us around. Go, Joe, go.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. That's not a chariot. A chariot is something specifically for a child that you hook up to your bike, and you pull the child behind you. And they suggest...
Is it a trailer then?
It's a trailer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a trailer.
And does the bike, like the baby bike carrier, go into it? Because they don't. At 6 months, she's not going to be old enough to support herself so well.
Oh, you don't know Ruby. No. Usually around 6 months, they start to be able to hold their head well enough so that they can go in the chariot. But they don't. Sometimes people, and it's not suggested by the company, will strap a baby carrier, the car seat, into the chariot.
Okay.
Like bungee that in there. We didn't do that. My husband is an emergency manager, and so we're going to do things by the book. We're not as hardcore. And, you know, some other people, like our friend Betsy Platt, will also. How old was her child when she took?
I don't know. They started like at weeks old.
10 days old, strapped into the cargo bike. They're much more hardcore than we are. But anyways, I think that being a parent, I'm tapping into a new cycle touring community that I never was really tuned into before. There is a group of people who go touring with their children, and they're kind of unsung heroes out there. But I think it's possible. You need to be able to carry enough, you know, a little extra weight. So you have to be in shape that way, because you have to carry your child, the chariot, possibly camping gear, and all of the stuff that comes along with babies. For a two-year-old, it might be a little bit different, but you're still going to need extra stuff. It's basically stuff for a whole other person. So low gears.
And then that whole other person that you're actually carrying.
Yes, the management.
And the food and water for a whole other person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's a management, but I'm really excited to do it, because the payoff for all of the extra trouble seems like it would be really great to get her out on the road, to camp with her, to show her different things. So I'm excited about it, and I can tell you more about it later. I hope to write, to sell a couple stories about my adventures, and write about them on my blog. So I can tell you more after I actually go through it.
Perhaps a submission to Bone Shaker is in your future.
Yes. Let's talk afterward.
Great. Well, wanted to, again, thank our guests for joining us today. Tori, did you have anything that you'd like to add? Okay. Wanted to thank our guests for joining us today, Ellie Tomheimer, Evan Schneider, and Christine Bruce. Did have a few closing announcements and events that I wanted to remind folks of. First off, tomorrow is the first official day of Pedalpalooza here in Portland, so get on those bikes and join in the party as it rolls around town. As Ellie mentioned, her book launch is tomorrow. That's Thursday, June 5th at VeloCult Bike Shop. The party starts at 5:30. Buy a book, get a beer, she says. Next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, our own co-host Tori Bortman will be celebrating the launch of her own book that was just released on June 1st. It's called Bicycling Magazine's The Big Book of Bicycling for Beginners. And that party will be hosted at RALPHA North American headquarters. That date, again, June 12th. The party starts at 5:30. Anything to add to that, Tori?
No, it's going to be really, really fun. I'm very excited to share the book with the world, so that's exciting.
Yeah, you did a great job with it.
Thank you.
Of course.
And I should mention, since Jocelyn's kind of tooting my horn, that Jocelyn is actually the cover model. So if you want to know what the image behind the voice is, you can buy one of my books and then you'll know what Jocelyn looks like.
Thanks, Tori.
If anybody's interested in getting involved in Pedalpalooza, going on any of the rides, where can they find the information for that?
Shift2bikes.org is a good venue for all that information. BikePortland.org will have a lot of information up there. The Willamette Week just released their bike guide. I think there's a bunch of stuff in there that you could probably look for as well.
And for those listeners not familiar with Pedalpalooza, it's a month-long celebration of bike events that are all grassroots. And grassroots meaning that anyone in this room, anyone listening right now can start their own bike ride. All you have to do is list it on that shift2bikes.org calendar and boom, you're putting on a ride. And there are so many.
It's quite a variety.
Multiple, like sometimes on some days, 8 different rides that you can choose from. From the David Bowie versus Prince ride,
always
to the donut ride, the taco ride, the
Lit and Loud is a good one.
Yes.
Mountain bike rides.
I'm super excited about, and we hope to have him on again soon, Peter Kuntz from the city of Portland. He's one of the main traffic engineers who designs how our streets actually function and work and how the lights are timed. He's going to do a wonky traffic light ride or traffic control ride. Which I'm really excited about. So,
and I'll be reading from my novel, a bicycling sort of novel, June 25th as part of Pedalpalooza. I believe it's at Disjecta.
Excellent.
And we'll be there too.
Oh, great. Did I get the details right?
I think you did.
Yes.
And that's which novel is that?
That's A Simple Machine Like the Lever.
Okay, very good. And the final event announcement that I wanted to do is an event upcoming called Bikes and Books. It's a literary event with a bar put on by our friend Aileen Crotty. Is this the same?
That's it.
Okay, very good. There's a little blurb here that I wanted to read just to familiarize folks. Excuse me. In the last 5 years, Portland has seen an explosion of authors publishing bike-related books. For one night only, is it Nisus Gallery? Where is the gallery? Does anyone know?
I think it's out on North Denver or Commercial.
I'm not sure.
Okay. I believe you're correct.
Event. Yes. Yeah. Search Facebook. You'll find it. In conjunction with Filmed by Bike, these authors will be on an alfresco stage for an evening of live readings, a bar, food cart, book sales, book signing, and a photo booth in the courtyard. It's a relaxed, wear your summer dress kind of night that brings a gallery back to basics, enjoying artwork in a rustic setting with an up-close opportunity to meet the artist and share the experience. Again, this event is part of the Pedalpalooza Bike Month series. Finally, just wanted to send get well wishes to our fellow co-host, Alon Robb, and a hearty congratulations to co-host Christopher Delaney and his wife Erin as they prepare for the any day arrival of their second kiddo.
Congratulations. So,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, super excited.
That's shaping up to be a real tour.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, for all those people, next month when we talk about the Oregon Outback and bikepacking and people are going to think that they're hardcore. No.
Wait until you're bringing along.
Wait until you're bringing children along on a bike tour. That's hardcore.
So are you going to help us take our kids on Oregon Outback next year? You're going to carry the chariot, right?
You better have some suspension on that chariot. Otherwise, you're going to have some very uncomfortable children.
Christine, that's the event to come down and visit us in Portland for right there.
I can't wait.
Yes.
It sounds so remarkable. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Yeah, it'll be wonderful. Great. Does anyone else have any final thoughts or ideas or suggestions that they'd like to share? Okay, we'll go ahead and close it up for this month. You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO in Portland. We're on the air the first Wednesday of every month at 11 a.m. Our show is podcast and archived at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. A special thanks to Portland Transport for hosting our podcast. You can also find our show on the KBOO website. The program is hosted and organized by Tori Bortman, Christopher Delaney, Alon Robb, and myself, Jocelyn Gowdy. A very special thanks to our production engineer, Tammy Dean. We'll be back next month to talk about bike packing. Until then, make it a great day. Keep riding your bike, and happy Pedalpalooza Portland.
Whoop, whoop.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. You're listening to KBOO Portland. That's it for the public affairs portion of today's programming, morning programming. Stay tuned for Jazz Lives following the KBOO Noon News headlines, which follows the following announcement.
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, June 4th, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, on Monday, Hilton Hotels announced plans to open a high-end boutique hotel in downtown Portland. No site was announced, but the hotel's developer bought the site of the former Pendleton Woolen Mills headquarters at Southwest Jefferson Street last year. City Development has seen plans for a half-block site that includes 300 hotel rooms, 24 apartments, and some retail space. The hotel will be 23 stories tall.
A number of California counties have stopped holding inmates for immigration agents. They are citing a federal court ruling that found an Oregon county liable for damages after it held an inmate after her release date. The California counties are among 100 municipalities across the U.S. who have stopped the practice since the ruling.
A federal court has ruled that California's treatment of mentally ill prisoners is haphazard and inadequate. Doctors discharge patients not because their treatment warrants it, but because they are afraid not to. Some patients are returned to prison too soon, drugged instead of counseled, and only rarely given the needed one-on-one therapy. These findings are the result of an 8-month investigation of conditions at psychiatric hospitals run within 4 state prisons.
In national news, the latest ABC Washington Post poll indicates that if an election was held today, 47% of registered voters would choose a Democrat and 45% would choose a Republican. While 81% of Republicans say they plan to vote in November, only 74% of Democrats will. Among non-whites, the number is even more distressing. Democrats also must deal with the fact that President Obama is not very popular now and will drag down other Democratic candidates.
An Iowa company accused of contributing to a nationwide salmonella outbreak has agreed to pay almost $7 million in fines for selling old eggs with false labels for years. According to the Des Moines Register, Quality Egg LLC is expected to plead guilty for bribing federal agricultural inspectors to approve poor quality and mislabeled eggs. The company's